listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 184 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
If you thought we were going to be talking about Bioshock this week, we changed the schedule on that, and that's not happening until episode 190, so if you still have plenty of time to play all the games. But we're going to talk about some other things this week, because loads of stuff happened in entertainment news last week. I mean, someone went and, you know, unveiled a new freaking games console. Somebody decided to try and sign one of the biggest media merger deal thingies ever. And then, you know, a bunch of people decided to go on strike. There was a lot going on. But I suppose
just a bit.
So I suppose we should talk about that new games console thingamabob.
Thingamabob.
That Nintendo are developing.
Is not the Wii U joypad that's been chopped in three.
Or we could be talking about the Nintendo Switch.
That's still a bit of a crap name, but it's better than Wii or Wii U, so I'll give them that.
Yeah,
so what was it? That was Thursday that they unveiled.
Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah, and
Red Dead Redemption 2 trailer o'clock.
Yeah, that was like just after. It was a bit crazy. What I noted with it did seem kind of funny though that Nintendo's website couldn't actually cope with demand during the announcement.
But their internet infrastructure is so good.
they clearly hadn't invested in any sort of like bursting scaling or anything to just kind of deal with the obvious fact that they would have loads of people around the world trying to access their website all at the same time. But it's okay.
Who would have predicted that?
But it's okay because they at least had the sense to upload their launch video to YouTube. And of course, Google has better servers.
That's how I watched it.
I think they have all the servers.
So if you've somehow not seen the trailer, I mean, obviously we'll link to it in the show notes, but it's a home console crossed with a portable console, essentially.
Yes.
Like, more so than the Wii U managed with its tablet device.
Oh, as you know, when some of the details that got leaked, and oh my, did it leak, didn't it? Because pretty much all the leaks that, you know, we've discussed previously came to pass.
Hmm.
They were, you know, pretty damn accurate. I see it as quite a nice, powerful handheld that happens to have TV out.
Yeah, I could see that.
And one of the reasons I think about it in that way is the Japanese market.
Yes, because they are not doing so great for home consoles anymore.
Yeah, I saw this as a weirdly... It was one of those where I know everyone's got their own, you know, personal prism that they view, you know, things from. But most of the Westerners seem to be looking at it as, well, it's a home console that you can pick up and it's got a screen on it. And I was, you know, coming at it from completely the opposite direction with it's an ARM, you know, it's a very nice bit of ARM hardware, the Tegra, that you can plug into the telly. I was seeing it as it's a Japanese machine and they're trying to sort of present it in the best possible way to a Western market because they know that, you know, they're quite different things.
But I think it kind of makes sense. I'm obviously concerned about how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, that's the major thing. The rumours I've heard is that it will be flying around about, if you're really lucky, it might be £250.
Which, I mean, for a brand new console is, you know, kind of about fine, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's still based on an existing ARM chipset, and you can buy tablets for less than that, with pretty much this hardware in.
It doesn't have all the fancy exterior peripheralness going on.
Well, all you have, what you can buy Bluetooth controllers, and you just pair them with your
tablet. To be fair, though, I mean, Nintendo have never really been kind of cutting edge computing type, you know, kind of company. So it kind of put in that expectation that they would, you know, have, you know,
well,
that
is it, you say that anyway. You say that, but the Super Nintendo, which had custom chips above and beyond anyone else at the time, and the GameCube was quite a beefy little, you know, creature.
True, by the same token, because both of those were examples of consoles where PC wasn't really, you know, kind of a competitor at the time, in kind of the similar sense, if you know what I mean. I mean, GameCube kind of going up to it a bit, but yeah. Now, as you say, you know, PC and console are competing almost.
Well, they always were. All it really needed was, and Microsoft were always shit at that, so Steam did it.
Yeah. Although, yeah. I mean, because obviously, you know, there's the actual tech of, you know, the Switch, which, you know, seems to be like, okay, well, I mean, it's good enough to apparently play Skyrim and stuff like that, which is good.
As Bethesda pointed out, they have not officially announced Skyrim.
Oh.
On Switch. And I can't remember what it was, but I saw a mention earlier today that there was a game listed in the, as in it was featured on the Wii U launch trailer.
Okay.
And it never came out on the Wii U.
Oh, right. Well, something that was cancelled or something that was just plopped in for, you know, it could probably play this type thing.
Yeah. It was, well, we'll put it in there, and it never came out.
I'm trying to find
what it was.
Does make me wonder whether it's, you know, a game that had been axed at, you know, kind of early in development, or whether it was something else.
Was it Metro Last Light was apparently featured in the Wii U launch video.
All right.
And it never came out on the Wii U. So just because it's there in the video and you recognize it and you go, Ooh, Skyrim! Doesn't mean that it's actually going to be on the console.
I hope it does happen.
Oh, it would be nice. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the more people playing Skyrim.
Bethesda obviously, you know, have been announced to be like a partner with Nintendo for, you know, something. So it's possible that, you know, we could have a Skyrim, even though it hasn't been like officially, you know, announced or anything. But
it would affect my desirability to play it.
It's possible, but the way I'm also looking at him, you know, I'm thinking, well, if it is on Switch, then it will be, what, about 6 months after it's released, you know, re-released as a remaster on, you know, current consoles and on PC. By the way, I'm getting 3D Dimension now. And, so, of course, that's several years after the original release, which was now 5 years ago.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, obviously Nintendo have done it just to kind of build up the hype, pretty much. To illustrate that, you know, it's not just, you know, third parties that are kind of doing spin-off titles like they did with the Wii and the Wii U in ways that people didn't really want in the first place. At least this is, you know, something that is actually popular.
Well, one of the things I said was, you know, if this means I could have a portable Pikmin that isn't a wanky platformer, because the 3DS didn't have any processing power. Well, I don't know. Blame whoever designed the 3DS. Oh yeah, that'll be you. And also, I call bollocks. I'll go back to there. Very quickly, I'll just call bollocks on that it doesn't have the processing power, because compare the 3DS to something like, you know, 486 PCs that were running Command and Conquer and Red Alert and Juned. So, bollocks to that, you could do a sprite-based one. Anyway, yeah, if it means that, the whole approach, the way I look at it is, if it means if I bought a Switch and the new Zelda,
yeah,
I would be able to play it as a portable game and on the TV because it's effectively the same console.
Yeah.
Slightly tweaked, viewpoint, but that's it. You know, one's laying on the sofa and the other is staring at my hand. Mm-hmm. Apparently being antisocial at parties, if you're someone in the, Nintendo promotional stuff. but, if that's the kind of thing, great. Because, where a lot of the time the sort of spin-off, portable games like on the DS, like Zelda Spirit Tracks and, that kind of thing, were quite nice in their own way. They were definitely, they definitely felt like cut down.
Hmm.
And also, I still resent the fact that there's a remaster of both Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, and if I wanted to play them, I'd have to play them on a handheld.
Yeah.
I still dislike that. Just, I would like to play it on a television like I did with the originals, which I still own. Thank you very much.
I think another issue, though, speaking of games you want to be able to play across the space, and that somebody mentioned to me on Twitter, is Virtual Console, and having that back catalogue easily available from launch would be helpful, because that is perhaps one of the things that got kind of frustrating with the Wii U's launch, and the fact that so much of what had been made available to the Wii wasn't.
One thing that annoyed me was that if you actually went on the Virtual Console on the Wii, bought a game, and then, you bought a Wii U and upgraded and whatnot, it actually cost you, admittedly, only a fraction of what it would have cost initially, but it still cost you to basically, download that game for the Wii U, even though you've already bought it for the Wii. And that really frustrated me.
I know that's part of Nintendo's, business strategy, which is to continuously milk their fan base. But I just don't think it washes.
Mm.
Not in the days of, Android and iOS and, PS3 to PS4 and, Xbox 360 to, Xbox One.
Yeah.
With a backward compatibility on the latter. It does not wash. If I bought a NES game, if I bought, Super Mario 3, I would want to be able to play that and continue from the save game on my Wii, on a theoretical Wii U, which I still don't own yet because I'm waiting for it to be cheap, and it will be cheap the way things are going.
Yeah.
Or on my 3DS.
Hmm.
I want to play, so far as I'm concerned, if I bought a Nintendo game, I should be able to play a modern enough.
Yeah.
So I really dislike, the whole thing there. And clearly with this being a, the Switch has no optical drive. So you're talking about, download or, it's effectively, the 3DS system. You either buy it on their e-store or you go into a store and you buy a card.
Yeah.
So, that's a situation we've got. I would like to be able, if it serves as a Nintendo hub, I have money here. I want to throw it.
Hmm.
Here, take my money. Because they have an enviable back catalogue of games. Not just Nintendo, but, on Nintendo platforms, there's some really good stuff. I want to play it. But, the whole idea of this machine, quite possibly 250 quid. I'll be generous and say, a machine like this with a built-in, screen and, and such.
Yeah.
It's going to be about 250 quid as a replacement, to the Wii U. I want to be able to play all my stuff on it, thanks.
Hmm.
With, within limits, obviously, because if I bought something on disc, then I wouldn't expect it to be, necessarily transferred for free.
No. Well, I mean, the one thing that got me about the trailer was that you could seemingly kind of hook up to the same game with, multiple consoles, which is obviously, kind of really nice touch and whatnot. But if it's going to be the price of a regular console, that means that, say, for example, if me and Emily wanted to actually have our own screens and play, you know, something, that means that we're going to have to get two consoles. Or if we both wanted to, you know, take it away and play our own things.
That's why I'm pretty much, if you look at it as a, you know, as a Nintendo handheld with TV out, then you see what I'm expecting from it, and you know that that looks like the kind of thing they're offering.
Yeah,
you're not going to have, you know, multiplayer on two different screens from, you know, the one machine.
Yeah,
but then does this?
So it's not it's not going to be a bit like, you know, the Wii U, whereas you know you can have one screen on the, you know, the controller and one screen on the TV.
But
That's what I'm taking away from it.
But where does this leave then multiplayer for Nintendo consoles? Are we seeing, because
in what respect?
In the number of people that can be on a single device. Because if you think about it, Nintendo's the one that's held out the longest for having in-person co-op and, well, just in-person multiplayer. Yeah.
Well, I mean, judging from the trailers, I think it was at least two, if not four people per console.
Yeah, I reckon they'll still do the sort of, you know, couch co-op, as they call it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not so bad. Because that's one of the only things they technically have going for them versus a lot of, you know, Xbox and PlayStation 4 stuff.
Well, I mean, because the, you know, two-side, what is it, the joypad? No. Something or other. Basically, the console kind of has two detachable controllers each side. And those only have, like, the analog stick and basically four buttons, so I'd imagine that would be limited to, you know, what kind of multiplayer games that you could play with that type of setup.
Well, though there has been suggestion, again, I don't know how, you know, and Nintendo has said that they're not going to be releasing any new information you know, this side of the new year, which is very helpful. Thanks, Nintendo, that, you know, that really you know, helps the whole situation. I heard rumors that those detachable controllers are possibly motion sensitive.
Okay.
Which would, you know, if that provides, you know, far more scope.
Yeah.
Another.
But yeah, and also, of course, they didn't show anyone using the screen on the Switch as touch screen.
No, that's very true. Which could actually mean that a lower price point may be possible, because, you know, touch screens obviously do add, you know, to a certain you know, amount of price to it.
So. Being the, you know, the techie wanker that I am, I do know that touchscreens don't add that much cost. Touchscreens themselves, you know, the actual sensor, you know, sensor layer, capacitive layer, they don't cost that much.
Although, so I mean, it would make sense if it's not touchscreen, because I didn't actually see any kind of port for a stylus either.
But if it's capacitive, then it wouldn't need a stylus.
It wouldn't need one, but I mean, Nintendo, you know, do like using styluses with their touchscreens.
The reason that it likes using styluses with their touchscreens is that they've been using pressure sensitive. They've been using resistive touchscreens.
Meanwhile, what actually everyone else seems to be saying about is the VR bandwagon that Nintendo doesn't look like they're jumping on with this.
If we're steering away from the Switch, can I just?
No, we're not. I'm saying that.
I've seen
its commentary is people being like, "Oh, but it's not going to have any VR," and it's just like,
does it need to?
Does it? I haven't drunk the VR Kool-Aid yet, so I don't know.
I've not actually managed to get on a VR system.
I think I've used VR, and my attitude to it is, wait about 2 years and then pick one up for about £70.
When everyone realises that it's just not worth the motion sickness and the dodgy controls and the inability to really visibly coolly animate transitioning from one area to another as a character walks.
Yeah, it's just, if you're using VR, you're in real trouble if you try walking in the game. It's, well, I'm sorry, but I've been walking in first-person games for quite a while now. I'm not really ready for that step back. And I just think that's an issue. I don't give a shit about VR on Switch. And I see very limited use for VR on, you know, other systems. So I am perfectly fine with Nintendo not giving it us because it doesn't look like Microsoft are either.
No, I mean, I've kind of always been excited for like Nintendo consoles, and I think I'm quite excited for this. And once again, it's more the possibilities of play than, you know, anything else. Because I can see it being, you know, quite good, you know, being able to have like a proper, you know, it's the equivalent of being able to take the Wii gamepad wherever you want and still play it. You know,
which in a way is precisely one of the problems of the Wii U had, because that's what so many people thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've when I first got the Wii U, I was like, oh, this is absolutely amazing. You know, I'll be able to take up the, you know, controller up to the bedroom when I go to bed and actually play a full console game type thing with it. Nope. The range wasn't good enough for that. It's not good enough to actually go into the kitchen.
Which is right next door to our living room, I want to point out.
Yeah. We don't live in a big house, believe me. But
Are the walls cast iron?
No, but I think that.
Those aren't thingy walls. That's plaster.
Yeah.
You don't live in a Faraday cage or anything, do you?
No.
Just checking.
Yeah. I think I move us on now. So excitement could be more, but more confirmation of details for third party and that kind
of and to
happen.
And obviously we're gonna need, you know, technical specifications for the, you know,
versus price point.
Yeah, because I mean presumably it's gonna have a 1080p screen. Will it output to, you know, 4K or anything? Not that I particularly care, because you need 4K TV to take advantage of that.
But I'm presuming with this that it could well have a, you know, 1080p screen.
Hmm.
Built in, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was lower, just to, you know, get the cost down a little bit more.
Also,
I would say it will output, 1080p at 60 frames per second, that kind of thing.
Also, another thing, I didn't see any kind of mention of any speakers or cameras on it either. So,
maybe they're a bit over.
It's bound to have speakers, actually, come to think of it.
It's bound to have speakers if you're using it as a portable.
Yeah.
They also didn't seem to be afraid of using a 3.5mm jack.
Oh my god, that means you won't be able to swim with it. Or any other bullshit reasons given for removing jacks. I'll point out with this, you know, with me saying that I'm viewing it as a portable that's got TV out rather than, you know, a home console that can be portable. Nintendo have said that it is not replacing the 3DS.
Yeah.
So my attitude is a bit, I would have preferred if you said that this was your new portable. Then it would have been, you know, the whole concentrated, instead of having, you know, the handheld games, you know, like with Hyrule Warriors, instead of having a handheld Hyrule Warriors and a, you know, TV console Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah.
You would have had Hyrule Warriors that you could take with you.
Well, that's the thing. I think, you know, this is almost like an attempt to ditch the Wii, or Wii U rather, because, you know, you've obviously got Mario Maker coming to the 3DS as well. That's before the end of the year. So, you know, the major successful stuff that they've actually done seems to be, you know, being ported to the 3DS. And it's like, so, you know, I've got this Wii U and that's great and everything, but I mean, you know, you're kind of making me a bit sad here, because you're just giving all the great stuff that was on it to, you know, the 3DS.
And of course, Splatoon was shown in the trailer, so that's going to be, you know, going to Switch.
Yes. Although
I do wonder with those whether they're going to be sequels or whether they're just going to be Switch edition with a little bit extra.
Well, I mean, my hope with Splatoon, because obviously you're fairly relatively limited, you know, it's like 4v4, you know, fair enough. But if you wanted to play on the same console, for example, and not online, you could only do 1v1.
That's a bit ridiculous.
So hopefully, you know, being able to kind of, you know, have this portable console out and about, you'll be able to, you know, have much better, you know, kind of play times with it.
I will point out that, and you know, if you look like the kind of painfully hipster,
painfully hipster,
you know, you get we'll invite, you know, Bob over. You know, come on, Bob. Come over to our, you know, rooftop party, you know, which we're having all hipster style. Oh, fuck, who, you know, who invited Bob? He's sitting there playing Bloody Zelda again.
I'm moving us on.
Put it down.
I'm moving us on. Okay, so...
I am relatively optimistic for it, though. I'll just...
Yeah. Okay. Over the weekend, and it's been in talks, the two of them have been in talks for months, but AT&T reached an agreement to buy Time Warner for $85.4 billion.
And for once, it doesn't include Candy Crush or bullshit like that.
Yeah, this is an actual worthwhile purchase in theory. AT&T, for those of you that don't know, because, well, we're in the UK, even though they do some degree of business over here, they're one of the largest infrastructure providers for telecoms and television in the United States. Obviously, Time Warner, they bring us a lot of multimedia entertainment that we enjoy, from obviously television shows and series to films to video games. Through various, obviously, like, companies that they've bought up or subsidiaries and whatever and holdings that they own. To most people, this may seem like a great idea. The issue that most people come up with is that it is a monopolization of content, because obviously you've got to worry about AT&T being kind of like, well, you've got to be on our service to get out all of this content, which would be quite crazy. It certainly would be the case for video games, because AT&T don't have any way of delivering video games. But yeah, it's just kind of, a lot of people are a bit concerned, because it's just such a huge media buyout because of the share that AT&T has over infrastructure in the US.
That and, yeah, you know, Time Warner are an incredibly large company.
Yeah.
You know, you have these kind of brand maps where, you know, sort of like, you know, on what seemingly unrelated, you know, products or channels or whatever, kind of owned, you know, by certain groups, and they're owned by certain groups as well. And Time Warner is one of those big groups. So AT&T could be taking on quite a, you know,
I mean, just
significant thing.
I mean, for instance, in terms of like the media that, or just stuff that Time Warner owns, they own HBO, they own CNN, and obviously they own Warner Bros.
Mm.
So obviously from HBO, obviously we get all that independent programming, including like Game of Thrones and everything like that. CNN, obviously that's news and news coverage and stuff. And then obviously with Warner Bros., that's a lot of various other entertainment products, including stuff on their other television offerings that aren't HBO, plus obviously all of their Hollywood film industry stuff as well.
Yeah, including, what is it, DC Comic?
DC would come under that as well. What is it? He must be obviously Warner Brothers Interactive, which is the video game section, would also then come under Warner Brothers as well. And that's pretty huge. You know, that's a lot of property to be hold of. I'm just trying to find the figure a minute, because there was this good New York Times article about it that was kind of like looking at how some people are obviously uneasy about the merger. And it wasn't just the monopoly side of things. There was concern. I'm going to have to see if I can find it in the word in here. Somebody talk amongst themselves a minute.
Well, one of the things I read about, going back a few years, does anyone remember AOL Time Warner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was one of the most nonsensical buyouts, mergers, whatever you want to call it. Because it was AOL. Really? Why are you bothering with AOL? And they split a good, you know, a few years ago, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one where it never made sense why AOL, you know, would have that kind of draw, and it just seemed to be, you know, part of the dot com bubble.
Hmm.
with, you know, you're massively overvaluing AOL. But yeah, they split up. Whereas something like this, as Emily says, it's an infrastructure thing. AT&T, as you know, they don't make their own, you know, movies or, you know, TV as such, but they, you know, they have a hell of an infrastructure.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got Time Warner that has, you know, all these, you know, different, you know, TV, movie, comics,
video games,
you know, all these different things. It's, you know, it's quite a sprawling creature. So, I saw it described as, what was it, a vertical amalgamation, something like that.
Yeah.
Where was it? They're not really competing, so it's not like they're taking out a competitor. But
then on a but then competitors to AT&T become disadvantaged.
Like yes. I was just about to get to that with, you know, so they're not competing with each other, but it does mean that you have a massive, massive fuck off behemoth.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but it's a behemoth in a slightly dubious position if it, the merger is agreed by federal authorities, because guess how much debt they will have combined?
About £2.50.
A bit more than that.
£3.
Staggeringly more than that.
A tenner.
A little bit more than that.
Okay, so the buyouts for $84 billion. The combined debt of both companies after the such merger would be more than that. To the tune of $175 billion.
So if what is the kind of point in them buying
something rather than offloading their debt.
With that debt.
This is one of the things when you get with like big companies where they kind of operate at this level where they're kind of like they make money and stuff and they keep reinvesting it, but they rarely pay off debt.
Capitalism.
It is the biggest risk essentially of the merger according to experts and analysts. It's a substantial amount of money and enough to cause worries, because obviously if the companies were to suddenly have problems or whatever, it could put a lot of entertainment and obviously infrastructure, real estate in trouble. So because basically the reason they got so much debt between is due to cheap credit. Apparently, if that cheap credit was not available so much anymore, it certainly would cause problems, because AT&T currently have to refinance every year to about maybe $9 billion anyway. So, you know. Well, AT&T apparently can easily handle its current debt load. But obviously taking on the combined debt is... Yeah. So if we ignore the monopolies issue at the moment, the joining of these two companies is a risky endeavour in of itself. And obviously, like, if they find that there's too much risk and stuff, and it obviously the creative side of things, which is all the programs and all the films and everything, you wonder how that might start to suffer. I mean, obviously I would find there might be hell. I would be kind of baying for blood if Supernatural were to be cancelled prior to it having a satisfactory conclusion. You know, I might go on a rampage
or a chance for the Winchesters to fuck it all up.
Yeah, basically, you know, if there wasn't some kind of conclusion, because they've, you know, been able to naturally run to the end of things, I'd be quite angry. And then imagine, for instance, like, obviously, say, I don't know, like, Flash is perhaps getting, like, middling to okay views and that. I mean, let alone what the network might think, what might the bosses above the CW think. But then there's also no details about how something, because the CW, which obviously produces all those shows, that's just one tiny part of Time Warner, and so the one tiny part of Warner Bros. and that there's the existence of the CW is because of doing deals with CBS, who are a different company.
Yeah.
So, and that's that can't
buy
be,
them
that,
as well.
So that can't be the only kind of like weird crossover situation, like weird kind of little bit of content creation, which to fans doesn't seem niche, but into the scale of such a company as that, is a freaking niche aspect to it all. So, okay, and then the other bit of news, now that we've talked that to death, is that some video games could be delayed because the Screen Actors Guild America Federation of Television and Radio Artists has gone on strike for voice actors. At least voice actors from the guild have gone on strike. This is...
Well, it shouldn't be an issue because how often do you hear voice actors in any games?
This is due to a inability for the industry to reach terms, obviously with the guild, in regards to various aspects of compensation when it comes to voice acting for video games. Looking through news coverage of this, it looks like actually the video games industry gets some weird freaking niche bullshit to have voice actors, like in comparison to film and television, in terms of like compensation in a form of royalties. Voice actors don't tend to really get that, and also stuff to do with like how if they can when they can like talk about stuff, like you know, you can making it hard for them to get work because they can't say for ages that they've done something. But also another issue is that apparently a lot of the time they won't be told the specifics of a project before being made, having to make a decision on agreeing to even work on it.
Really?
So they could be asked to work on a project that maybe they don't, if they knew about the details of it, they wouldn't agree to work on. And they've got to basically make deals blind.
Wow, that is ridiculous.
So, and considering that actually, if you're a main character in a story-driven video game that plays for 20 or 30 more hours, that's a lot more work than a goddamn film, or maybe not necessarily a TV series, because if you've got like a long-running kids animation show or something called like Cartoon Network or whatever, that's gonna be a lot of work. But yeah, it does make
me wonder though, because I mean it's kind of been widely known that video game work can be quite bad for kind of paying conditions and stuff. You know, you've had like several kind of companies that have kind of shut down simply because they've got no money after actually publishing a really well-respected, game series, for example.
I'm just looking at the NPR article, and obviously I said about royalties. Well, the issue is that one thing is that they've been pushing for residuals for the gaming work. Currently, they received a fixed rate, which is typically apparently $825 is like a standard four-hour vocal session. But they obviously want secondary compensation, so a performance bonus when a game sells, you know, like 2 million copies or downloads or reaches 2 million unique subscribers with like a cap at like 8 million or something.
It is a little bit like when you hear about, an author or a singer or, you know, something that, you know, just paid for, you know, just, you know, cash in hand, that's it. And then whatever it is that they've done or they've sold, you know, goes on to make millions.
Yeah.
And they're sort of stuck with just, you know, whatever they were given at the time. You know, like a lot of session musicians, you know, and really big songs.
I think also perhaps part of the issue is that the video games industry isn't treating their acting work the same as their acting work would be treated in other media that they've obviously gotten their rights and stuff in for, like, film and television, because looking at, you know, NPR coverage of this, I've read a couple of articles about this. The first article I read was on Eurogamer. But Scott Wilton, according to, this is quoting NPR, Scott Wilton, the lawyer representing the video game company, says voice actors, and this is a direct quote, represent less than 1/10 of 1% of the work that goes into making a video game. So, even though they are the top craftsmen in their field, Wilton says, if we pay them under a vastly different system than the people who do the 99.9% of the work, that is going to create far more problems for the video game companies. That's their excuse. And it's like, well, yeah, but it's a different style of work to what like people who work in films and TV behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's, well, in that case, shall we pay the special effects artists on movies and TV? Should we pay them a lot better? The answer is yes.
Yeah. And
also, if you know, if they represent just a tiny speck of what goes into a game, let's go back to text boxes and see how people react.
Yeah. But basically, they don't want to do residuals, it seems, is the main thing. They don't want to do residuals at all. And it's like, well, technically, perhaps there should be more residuals for certain people at certain levels in, you know, the game. Because the thing is that getting work as an actor is really fucking hard, whether you're in front of a camera or at a mic. It's really hard to get that work. If you've got, even if you've got experience and stuff, the mentalities around hiring for acting can be really fucking harsh, like harsher than technical jobs, where a lot more of the time, like just the fact that you can do something and you've got experience is enough. But in acting, just because you have technical experience and you can do the job often isn't enough, because of the prejudices and everything involved in the hiring practice actually becomes far more to the fore, because it's so much more about the person rather than necessarily their ability. So I would argue that, unfortunately, actors perhaps do deserve a different level or style of compensation for their work when it comes to them obviously being a part of an entertainment product.
You pay for the immersion that they offer.
Yeah.
And I'm a particular fan of things like Mass Effect, you know, the Bioshocks I'm playing through at the moment. And if either they weren't voice acted or they weren't done as well, then that would be a massive kick in the immersion factor.
In fact, Jennifer Hale is one of the people that isn't crossing the picket line.
Team Hale.
This one at the moment.
I am definitely, you know, if she's on her side, you know, for, you know, something like this, then I am on her side, because, yeah, she's one of my favourite voice actresses.
But yeah, she's a member of the main union, so, you know.
And one of the criticisms, you know, well, complaints rather than criticism about this is, well, you know, why should voice actors get better treatment? Because, you know, devs don't have unions.
But you could have unions.
Well, yeah, there's an obvious answer to that. Get a union.
Yeah. But
it's like, it's, you know, you're so close on there. Just go on, push the thought further. Yeah. Push it further. Go on, see where it goes.
Rather than have a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
Actually do something.
Well, we're getting treated like shit. Everyone should be treated like shit. And, you know, apart from you lot who have a union, who don't want to be treated like shit. So, you're looking at it the wrong way.
Yeah. Also, as the union side has pointed out, because it's the residuals they only want them to come in if a game sells a minimum of a certain number of copies. So it's not automatically default for every game. If a game sold like 2 million, you know, 2 million copies or had 2 million downloads at full price or whatever, or has to, it's done very bloody well, especially at full retail price for a lot of that.
So it's the kind of thing that would not become an issue unless you had a certain level of success.
Yeah.
And if you have that certain level of success, then there's far less problem with paying for, you know, just the base work on it. You can, you know, afford to, you know, share out a little bit more of the, you know, the pie once you reach a threshold.
I'm just going to check, because I think the Eurogame article had a list of the publishers and developers involved, didn't it? Come on, Eurogamer, where are you? Because it's big company. It's not like it's minor developers or anything involved. These are basically mainstays of the damn industry who are kind of saying, who've said no to what they basically, the industry said, oh, well, we can give you a 9% pay rise. But that's like, that doesn't cover the issue of how much you haven't managed to earn if a game sells a minimum of 2 million copies. So, game, who's involved? Who's involved? Where's the list? Okay, publishers cited in the strike include Activision Publishing, Blinding Light,
gosh,
LLL C Corps of Discovery Films, Disney Character Voices, Electronic Arts Productions, Formosa Interactive, LLC, Insomniac Games, Interactive Associates, Take-Two Interactive Software, VoiceWorks Productions, and WB Games.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, I can't think, I mean, can you just imagine the shitstorm that would happen if you had a new Uncharted game and it had a completely different voice actor?
I think there would be violence and rioting in the streets.
Yeah.
The
Drake bros would not take kindly, and of course the Drakettes, or you know, whatever you want to call it. basically, the Nathan Drake fans would not be happy with a character that they've spent probably, you know, like, well upwards of, you know, 50, 60 hours over the, you know, the last decade or so with. And, you know, suddenly, I don't know, it sounds like the English-French policeman from Hello, Hello, rather than what's-his-face, who you can't escape.
It does make me wonder what, like, the high-ups actually earn in comparison. Because, you know, I kind of assume from most structures in, you know, society that, you know, the higher ups, the CEOs and, you know, the, you know, basically the big wigs of each company, they mostly earn quite a lot more in terms of percentage than just the, you know, regular, you know, kind of worker.
Well, yeah, if you're the CEO of any of these entertainment companies, you're singing all the way to the fucking bank. You know, and with probably some very nice champagne and caviar.
Because obviously any industry has to be self-sustaining in the sense that the money that it makes, a percentage of that goes into future endeavours. That's understandable. But it's, you know, that slice that, you know, the people that don't necessarily do nothing, but just they do stuff, but then other people do a lot more of the gritty work or the grime,
yeah,
as it were.
Yeah, you know, I think we've talked this one around a lot. Do we want to have a quick little go at what everyone's been up to for the past week? Which is hopefully nothing involving baseball bats. Just saying. Yeah, so shall I go first? What I've been up to?
Okay.
You can go first or I can go first.
I'll go first because...
Okay, yeah. Go ahead then.
Go ahead. So obviously I wasn't really speaking much last week, but through the miracles of technology, I have seen the first two episodes of season 12 of Supernatural. I will not spoil, but they've been pretty darn good. Second one was a little bit shakier than the first, but still good. You know, it's keeping up with the kind of like the energy that season 11 kind of like started after a couple of seasons where it was a bit. So it does feel like that, because the current showrunner's Andrew Dabb. Is, what's his face? Carver stepped down at the end of last season, but it sounds like Carver had been working on other stuff more, and that Dab had taken over most of last season's sort of workload, which might explain why last season was actually pretty darn good in comparison to season 10 and 9. So season 12 looking hopeful. They've got like a, I think we've got a regular Monster of the Week case coming up for episode 3 this week. So Yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful at the moment. They haven't done anything to deeply make me rend my hair or something. So that's good.
A Bobby or Charlie Bucky app?
No.
Boo!
Also, I would point out that the writer that created Charlie, he no longer works on the show. He left at the end of last season. That was Robbie Thompson. He was the guy that wrote. He wrote the baby, the episode 4 of last season, the one which was all within the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, he left.
One of the more interesting ones.
Yeah. He'd been with the show for a long time, but I think he's been going in way more into comic book writing lately.
Right.
So he's, yeah.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, you can't kind of go...
Expect people to be on there forever.
Yeah, because, I mean, 12 years is a long
time. I'm not sure if he'd been on it from, like, the beginning, but he was certainly one of the longest-running
But, I mean, writers. 12 years is a long time to be working on just one project. In essence,
yeah,
you know, you've got to have side projects here, there, and everywhere.
Okay, and Miracle of Miracles, I finally finished watching all of Gilmore Girls whilst I've been recovering from half of a wisdom teeth sort of situation extraction. So that was nice. I'm now all ready for the special episode coming out next month. Actually excited for it, which feels weird because the show wasn't the kind of show that I would have ever watched before because it was quite girly. So
is it a barbecue episode where it could be Gilmore Grills?
Oh.
I'm sorry.
You're not sorry. You're so
I'm not sorry at all, no.
No, you're not. But it was interesting kind of watching it, and in some ways the series was quite progressive for the time in terms of like representations of like women and relationships, and obviously like having kids out of wedlock, not forcing people to get married and making a place for themselves in the world and stuff. I still am not happy with the lack of clear conversation about contraceptives in the series. Because it is an issue due to what happens to certain characters. It's just kind of like... And so we're not going to discuss this in depth. Oh, okay.
It seems to happen just way too much in TV where there's not even any mention of a condom. There's no taking off a condom or you know, anything like that. There's just, like, sex. And...
To be fair, though, I think Supernatural managed to get somewhere with that at least last season where they had that dinner around at Jodie's. And there was that whole boys talk.
Horrific, deeply uncomfortable.
Yep.
Dinner chat.
Yep. But anyway, so that was Gilmore Girls. I managed to finish that. Oh, what else have I been watching?
Been watching The Walking Dead.
Yeah, we started watching right back at the beginning of The Walking Dead. And we've watched all of season 1 and 2, and we're near the end of season 3.
Yes.
I mean, oh yeah, he's dead now. A lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still not sure about the portrayal of zombies in the show. I also realised that depending on when The Walking Dead ends, even comic book form or TV form, that if they never get anywhere close to how everything started, at least in presenting an answer, like in a throwaway file somewhere that someone digs up, that got printed out in hard copy somehow before it went to shit, I will be kind of annoyed.
Well, to be honest, I mean, with Walking Dead has never been a show where it's like every scene has to be about like Rick or you know one of the survivors. You've always had kind of cutaway stories where you know this happens or that happens, so you could very well have the last ever episode of it which is like you know oh yes and this is how everything started.
Yeah, that would be nice.
You don't need to involve any of the main characters.
It would be really nice. What else? Oh, we've tried picking up Jessica Jones again. We watched the first episode just before starting to record tonight.
You need someone to pop over every day or so and tell you to watch another episode.
So yeah, I'm currently kind of like at a loose end what to watch during bike sessions. I tried watching the opener of season 2 of Teen Wolf, but I wasn't quite feeling it. So yeah, need to figure out what I'm watching whilst I'm biking at the moment.
I recommend something like Lost Girl.
What's that available on though? Because I like to use
Dave Internet.
Yeah, I like to use slightly more legit services when I'm on my bike because it makes tech easier. So, anyway.
It was showing on Sci-Fi, so it may be available somewhere on there.
Hmm. Okay. Retro, what have you been up to?
Well, I have been playing the BioShocks.
Yeah.
So I will save that for, you know, when we do the podcast. But just last night, I finished BioShock 2.
Ooh.
And I'm about to dive into dive into the Minerva's Den single player DLC, which is still one of my favorite DLCs for a game. So I'm looking forward to, you know, playing that again. And it's one of the things I did in the last few weeks, which I don't think I got around to mentioning. Stop me if I did. Retooling my original Game Boy.
I think you did mention something about that, but I can't remember what exactly. It might have been that you were preparing to do it, but you were too ill at the time.
Yeah, that sounds likely. I completely replaced the case. So I took my original 1989 DMG-001 model Game Boy. Apart because the original case had been quite badly, yellowed.
Hmm.
The bromide and the plastics had come out, so it was no longer the sort of, you know, off-white grey.
Yeah.
But it was, so I ordered a replacement case and, replaced the parts, which I thought would probably need it. So the buttons are still the original ones. One or two of the rubber membranes under the buttons I replaced with the new ones I got in a pack. I've tested it. I'm quite happy with it. I can't find my copy of Tetris.
Oh.
This is a disaster.
You've obviously put it away somewhere too well.
Yes.
Maybe you've stuck it on an already full shelf and it's just suddenly disappeared.
I have lots of already full shelves. Lots. So, yeah, I'm going to have to keep an eye out on that. But I have ideas, for making it backlit.
Ooh.
And in a particular homebrew way. Which, if I get around to doing it, I'll talk about it then. But, yeah, I've got a broken DS Lite screen.
Okay.
And I've got an idea about using the backlight from that. And stripping some layers from, and reflective layers from the original Game Boy, LCD, and, wiring up that way. But I'm going to have to work out the voltages because there's the original Game Boy is relatively high voltage in comparison with modern electronics. So that's going to be an issue.
Hmm.
I don't want anything to blow up because that would be bad.
Yeah.
Let's see. Apart from that, and of course, finished Lost Girl. We've started watching Luke Cage, which I am enjoying. It's got a pleasantly different feel.
Ooh. What?
I hesitate to use the term, but it's got a very sort of 70s vibe to it.
Oh, you speak of 70s. I watched all of the Get Down whilst I was ill.
Ah.
As well. That was really good. I think it's definitely worth a watch.
Let's see. Also watched three episodes of the new Black Mirror.
Ooh, still need to watch all of those. As in, all of this season.
Yeah.
So is this three?
We watched the first two.
Hmm.
Which will be Nosedive and what's the second one called? Well, it's something, you know, game related, but it's yeah. I'm not going to say anything about them. Okay. Other than I enjoyed them. The first two are sort of horrible in different, in entirely different ways.
Okay.
And it's interesting how with the first one, which stars was it Bryce Dallas?
I'm not sure.
From she was in Jurassic World.
All right.
That one, several people seem to be taking different things about it, because the idea is everyone's got a contact lens, and it's like it's a social network. Everyone rates everyone else, and everyone is obsessed with their rating out of five. And depending on how high or low your rating is, you're allowed in certain areas or to have certain properties with certain discounts.
That sounds very much like that one episode of Community.
But what's interesting is that I've seen takes about it on, oh, it's talking about social media. And I've seen another one, which is it's talking about privilege, as in if you've got, you know, white privilege or, you know, money privilege.
Okay.
You know, class privilege.
Yeah.
And yeah, what I took up from it was having to fit into cliques.
Okay.
Sort of moderating yourself so you fit in with people that you want to be accepted by, and why you shouldn't do that. But I'm not going to say anything more about that, other than, so we watched the first two, and then we skipped one, because after all, it's an anthology, and I think the fourth episode is called San Bernardino, or it, you know, something like that. But that's one which I found just very nice in a sci-fi technological way.
Okay.
And it's probably as close to a feel-good that I've seen on Black Mirror.
Well, it is called Black Mirror. It is meant to
be. Yeah, exactly. But I watched part of a talk with Charlie Brooker, and Charlie Brooker and one of the directors and the producer of the series that he's worked with from the very beginning, and it was at the, you know, British Film Institute, BFI. And just one of the terms he said, where is it? Yeah, they're not all depressing, because, you know, some of them we like to you know, kick you down a hill and you fall into a horrible pit, and then we piss on you. But there's at least one of them where we'll kick you down a hill, but you land on cushions or, you know, kittens.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. So yeah. it's like, yeah. It was along those lines, and having, you know, seen the episode and you go, oh, that's the one he was talking about. It's like, yes, I kind of see what he's talking about there. But yeah, I've really enjoyed them so far, and it's just, you talented bastard, working on a series like this, Mr. Charlie Brooker, who, you know, used to work on PC Zone and, you know, magazines like that, or, you know, I was reading them back in the day, and, you know, writing, you know, really rubbish Lara Croft's, you know, Cruelty Zoo in, you know, cartoons in the back pages. Writing the equivalent to, you know, modern Twilight Zone / Outer Limits.
Yeah.
And doing a bloody good job. So you sod. Yeah, I've you know, really been enjoying that, and been playing a bit of Geometry Wars 3 on, you know, PC and on Vita.
Okay.
And finding that, oh, yeah, it appears that if you've spent over a month not being able to sleep more than about 4 hours a night for, you know, unknown reasons, because your body has decided that's all you're going to get, it really does shit on your reaction times.
Oh. Yeah.
So when, you know, when you finally start to, you know, sleep a bit better, suddenly your high scores go up on a game like Geometry Wars 3. So that's nice to see.
Do you feel more alert as well?
I would say yes, but over the last 2 days I've been feeling a bit more shit.
Ah.
So just, you know, I'm still, you know, sleeping properly, just for some reason I've, you know, felt a bit wound down. And I don't know why. I've not gone back to Geometry Wars 3 because it would probably just make me cry.
That's fair.
And I've been fiddling about with some electronics, but I've not done enough there to, you know, really warrant talking about. So
yeah. Okay.
Okay, well, what have you been up to, Paul?
Me? Well, Walking Dead, we've already kind of discussed that. Other than that...
You watched Once Upon a Time?
Yeah, I've been kind of keeping up with the weekly drip feed of Once Upon a Time on Netflix. And yeah, that's going interestingly.
Oh, that sounds...
Yeah.
It's quite entertaining. It's a bit soap opera-y at the moment. But yeah, it's an interesting series.
We watched Crazy Head at the weekend.
Yes, the first episode of Crazy Head.
Which is by, what's his face that made that Misfits thing 3-4 back in the day. Demons are real and certain people can see them.
Yeah, I what did I describe it as? A cross between Buffy and They Live.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it feels like so far. And ruder than either of them.
Yeah, so maybe Buffy, They Live...
Basically. It's been pretty good so far. We've only had one episode, but I'm sticking with it. I want to watch the next one, which is on Wednesday this week, on E4.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that kind of reminds me.
Oh, yeah.
Something we should mention as well. With you mentioning Misfits and me thinking about, comic adaptations, or also, with Walking Dead, which made me think of Preacher.
Oh, yes.
And, the sad news this week that Steve Dillon, the artist and co-creator on Preacher and artist on a hell of a lot of 2000 AD.
He did also significant work on Hellblazer back in the day as well, before Preacher.
All those kinds of things, working in partnership a lot of the time with Garth Ennis.
Yeah.
I was buying 2000 AD when he was doing Rogue Trooper and, some of the Dread strips with Garth Ennis. So, yeah, very sad news and just unexpected, because he was only about 50-odd.
It was like 52 or 54.
Yeah, so very sad. It's just... Yeah. Seriously, fuck you, 2016.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's just sad face. So I read a few volumes of my Rogue Trooper collected.
Aww.
And it was like, sad face.
I've definitely got some stuff that Steve Dillon's had a hand in over on my sort of trade paperback shelf.
Yeah.
So, just... unexpected, really. Everyone's a bit sad, basically.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Sorry to end on such a downer.
But there are kittens, and they are very cute and fluffy. There we go. There's
kittens.
Move.
There we go. There's kittens. So it is good night from...
It's goodbye from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroed on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroed on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter at Paul Blewett.
It's goodnight from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891. You can find notes for this episode and other episodes over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. You also find us on iTunes and Stitcher if you're so inclined. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. You could email us at contact@nerdsassemble.co.uk if somehow you thought that would be a good idea. It probably isn't.
Anywhere else that they can find us?
Nah. I mean, I keep trying to get us a plot on the moon, but I keep getting refused, so...
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Well, I'm down in the supermarket tomorrow, so you could contact me there. It would be weird.
Just in the frozen aisle.
That's it for this week, so good night.
Good night.
Good night.